Hello, welcome to this episode of Dear Analyst. In today's episode, I'm going to be talking about how to use Excel tables and what are some of the upsides and downsides of using Excel tables. Now, if you are new to Excel, you may be wondering, aren't I already doing tables in Excel? I already have a list of all my students and their test scores. I have a list of salespeople and their sales amounts and their commission. So maybe I'm already doing Excel tables. Well, this actually has to do with the fact that I think the way that Microsoft named this feature in Excel is not the best. Let's put it that way. So you may be thinking you're doing Excel tables, but in reality, the table feature is actually a whole separate feature from doing just a list of data in Excel. And to make this even more confusing, Excel tables used to be called Excel lists. So with newer versions of Excel, you now can create Excel quote-unquote tables that are much different than just having a list of data in Excel. So when would you create an Excel table? So anytime you want to manage and analyze a group of related data in a more intuitive way, you would use an Excel table to turn that list of cells into a table. So let's go ahead and talk about how to make an Excel table. And I just want to apologize in advance. I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, so my voice may be coming in and out during this episode. So first off, after you have created a list of data in Excel, it could be a list of students with their test scores, like I said, or from the official Microsoft documentation, they have a list of salespeople and their sales amounts and their commission percentages. And you have this list, and now if you click on the Home tab in the ribbon, the Home tab is the first option in your ribbon, and if you go into the middle of the ribbon, you'll see a button that says Format as Table, and once you click on that, that's when you can turn your boring list of data into a table in Excel. And I think the reason Microsoft put the Format as Table button in the Home tab is to make the feature more prominent, so that as you're kind of browsing around the ribbon, you would come across this nice big Format as Table button. It would make it easy for you to play with that feature. This feature, however, is definitely a little more advanced to use once you get into the nitty-gritty of it. But Excel, I think, has made it very easy to discover this feature by just having it straight up smack dab in the middle of the Home ribbon. So first off, after you click on that button, you're going to notice one big change to your list of data is that it adds some color formatting to your table. And it turns the first row, the header row with all your column names, into a certain color. And then also you'll notice that all your rows in your table alternate in color as well. And believe it or not, I think when I talk to someone who uses this feature, this Excel tables feature, most of the time when they do it primarily for the formatting reason, and that's it. You know, because when you create a list of data in Excel, like, you don't have any formatting, there's no colors, nothing's bolded yet, there's no borders, and it's a pain in the butt to go in and color everything, right? So when you create an Excel table, it automatically creates the color formatting, and it creates the banded rows, so you can quickly see how the rows of data alternate, because the color formatting alternates between no formatting and color coding the entire row. So it's kind of like a nice little visual feature to see when you are able to format your rows of your inner table better, because then you can just see your data better. So if you use the Excel table feature just for that, that's totally fine. I think people use it because it just helps with formatting, but in reality, there's so much more that the tables can offer. So what do the tables offer? So the very first thing you'll notice is when you write a formula in the table, you don't have to reference the specific cells anymore. I don't know if you can, if you notice that when you type in a formula, usually you are doing like, you know, C1 times F5, and it's, you're specifically referencing specific cell references in Excel. However, when you write a formula in an Excel table, you actually can reference the entire column. So for instance, let's say I have two columns in my table. I have one column, which is sales amount. Let's say that's just like the total sales my salesperson brought in. And the second column is commission percentage, which is the commission that they would earn on the sale. So the third column is an empty column, which is the total commission amount in a dollar format. So what is the total commission? So if your salesperson brings in $1,000 in sales, their commission is 10%, that commission amount would be $100. So prior to using Excel tables, you would have to do cell A1 times B1 to equal the commission amount of $100. But when you write that formula in an Excel table, you can actually just reference the entire column, and you can say sales amount times percent commission, and the entire column of commission amount would automatically pre-fill the commission amount with you, without you having to write A1 times B1 and then dragging the formula down. You write the formula once, which is sales amount times percent commission, and it automatically creates that formula for you in the entire column in the table. So that's already one big advantage, is not having to copy formulas multiple places. And what's more important is that as you add more rows of data to your table, the table expands automatically. So when you add a new row to your salesperson table with the sales amount and the commission percentage, that commission amount will automatically calculate because, again, since you have these formulas that don't reference cells but rather reference the entire column, that formula automatically fills up for you when new rows of data are added to the table. So that's really a neat feature of Excel tables, is that it's kind of like a more living and more organic kind of list of data, versus in the old world, you have to add in the new row, and then you have to make sure all the formulas, typically to the right, have pre-filled with the right formulas for you, no matter what kind of formulas you're writing. So having formulas automatically fill up is a really, really awesome feature. And just as a tangent, going on a tangent on this a little bit, the fact that you don't have to write A1 times B1, and rather you see in your formula it's sales amount times percent commission, literally the words sales amount times commission, it's a more like human readable way of looking at formulas versus looking at cell C5 times D500 or whatever. Now, some people may see this as like kind of not a great feature in Excel tables, because sometimes you want to reference a cell in some random part of the workbook. Maybe you want to reference like cell A1 in sheet 2 because there's some input from that file you want to put into your current sheet. And so these Excel tables, while they're powerful, are not great at connecting data together from multiple tables. So this really only applies if you have a formula that has to be calculated based on the current data in the current table. So if you are doing VLOOKUPs and combining data together, this may not be the best feature for you in terms of using Excel tables. Nonetheless, most people are doing pretty simple tables of data and just calculating the commission amounts or the tax amounts, and the tables are a much better way of getting those formulas on the fly. So what are some other advantages of tables? Another one is that when you create a table, you can name the table. In the very top left of your Excel file, kind of like to the left of the formula bar, you can call the table. By default, it's called table one, and then new tables are called table two, table three. But you can rename those tables to be called salespeople, to be students. And then if you ever want to quickly jump to that table, no matter what worksheet you're in, you can just click on the top left, again, to the very left of the formula bar, you can click on that dropdown, and all your tables will show up in a dropdown. And then you just click on the table, and it brings you to that table in your Excel file. So that's a really nice feature to have. If you have like five tables in your Excel file and you want to quickly just move to that specific table. And some other aspects about the formulas is that I guess we talked about how they can automatically fill up, right? The way that you write the formulas is similar to the way you write formulas today, which is clicking on cells. Let's say you're writing a sum formula. You want to sum A1 and B1. You might click on A1 and then B1. In a table, you can actually, let's say you have the commission amount. It's filled up from cells C1 to C10. If you want to quickly find the max or the min of that range in the price in the commission amount column, you can actually just click anywhere in that column after you've written E equals min or max, and it will automatically throw in the reference to the entire column versus the specific cell reference. So imagine today when you click on a cell, when you reference a cell, it's A1 or B5. But when you reference a cell in a table, it doesn't actually pull in the cell reference. It actually pulls in the column name. So if you have a table called salespeople and you have a column in that salespeople table called commission amount, when you click on a value in the commission amount column, the reference it pulls back would be salespeople commission amount. And it's a way to reference the entire column of data versus having to select the entire range of C2 to C10 rather, because C1 has your rows, your header rows. So that's one of those nice features about the tables, is that cell references turn into column references. Now, some people may not like that because you want to sometimes, again, I just stated, you want to reference a specific cell rather than the entire range. But again, this is usually for simple tables of data where all the formulas are for that specific table in question. This actually is a really handy feature to have. Some other nice features about tables. I think one other thing I'll point out is that if you want to change the ordering of the columns in your table, you can just drag and drop the columns and move them left and right, and they'll automatically just like kind of reorganize themselves. Usually in Excel, with the regular list, you have to like cut the column and then paste it into a new column, and then there's an empty column you have to delete where you just cut, and sometimes you're overwriting data, and you have to Excel gives you this really nasty error message saying, do you really want to overwrite your data here? You would just say yes or no. But with a table, this reordering of columns of data just is super simple as dragging and dropping. So you don't have to worry about overwriting data and cutting and pasting and all that kind of stuff. It's as simple as dragging and dropping. So I've talked a little bit about the pros and cons of Excel tables. One big thing I don't like about Excel tables is the way that you start writing formulas, specifically when you're writing a structured reference. Now, what exactly is a structured reference? A structured reference is kind of like just a new way of writing formulas that don't use cell references. And I talked about this just a few minutes ago, but You may already see this when you actually, you know, when you are, let's say, summing a bunch of cells in Excel, you might write equals sum and then like C5 to C10. When you reference a cell in another workbook, in another file, you will see things like worksheet 7 and then the range of cells. So you already are kind of doing structure references when you are referencing cells from other files. However, with an Excel table, it takes the structured reference to a whole nother level. And instead of typing in the cell reference, you just get the entire column, like I said. And the reason why I don't like the way that the structured reference works is because the syntax is just like a complete cluster. So for instance, if you have a sales people table, in order to reference the, without using your mouse, again, I'm trying to just talking about writing a formula with the keyboard, you have to write equals sales table. And then if you want to reference a sales amount column in your sales people table, you would say equals sales, sorry, you would write equals sales people, left bracket, and then the at symbol, left bracket again, the words sales amount, and then right bracket. Now, I don't know about you, but I already find writing parentheses a pain in the butt already in Excel. Now we're introducing the at symbol, left and right brackets, the hashtag symbol to represent the total columns. The syntax is just like complete nonsense to me. And I don't know. I mean, I think having a syntax to write structured references is really difficult, but the way that Excel handles it right now for the tables is really not conducive to writing formulas. You can, of course, click on the column names in the table to reference the column. But again, when you are doing this at scale and you don't want to use your mouse and use the keyboard, having to use this really kind of strange syntax, it completely breaks from the current paradigm of writing Excel formulas in non-tables with parentheses and all that kind of stuff. But I think if you are really bent on learning Excel tables, you will probably take the time to understand the syntax. I haven't, just because most of my data is not structured in such capacity. And I don't find or have the need to learn the syntax. But I think it definitely is a hurdle for a lot of people. So if you are new to Excel and don't even understand how to write Excel formulas that well, I think learning the syntax for Excel tables might be even more difficult, because it's a complete different way of thinking about how to reference cells, when you're probably just used to just clicking on a cell and automatically brings in the cell reference for you. So just to wrap things up, hopefully this gave you a nice introduction to Excel tables. I also will link to a blog post about tables in general that compares tables in Excel to Coda. And I think that, again, if you are using lists of data in Excel and you're a little more of an advanced Excel user, I would definitely recommend looking at Excel tables. Again, the pros are that formulas automatically pre-fill the entire column. Data can quickly be added to the table and new rows automatically become part of the table. Downsides are that, well, first of all, it's a difficult name. Excel tables is just like a bad name. I think it could have been called like Excel matrix or something like that, or just something a little more interesting. Also, the syntax for formulas is completely different from regular Excel references in Excel. So those are some of the cons of using Excel tables. But overall, I think it's a great feature to use, and definitely gives you more structure to data that's related to each other in your Excel files. All right, so that's the main bit about our big Excel feature today. The next part of this episode is all about other podcasts that I listen to that I think you'll find interesting. And the first episode I want to highlight is from a newer podcast I started listening to called the startup chat with Stelly and Hitton. And this, it's a, as you can imagine, this is a podcast about doing your own startups, how to grow your startup, so on and so forth. And around minute, this is in episode 391, around minute five minute and 28 second mark to be exact, they started talking about how to create effective comparison pages in your on your website when you're comparing your product with your competitors. And one interesting thing to note that I haven't really thought about that they brought up is the fact that SEO is a term for called search engine optimization. And it's a term used when you create a website that is optimized for Google ranking and Google searches. And one thing they brought up is that many people, many SEO experts, so to speak, they help you optimize your website, your homepage, your other comparison pages, if you're comparing your product with your competitors, they make it so that it's SEO ready, meaning that there's a good headline, there's a good title, the first paragraph contains keywords that are found in the title, and so when someone searches for this page on Google, they will come across your page and find that it's really relevant to their search and want to stick around and read the page. Now, one thing they brought up that I didn't really think about until now was that you can almost over SEO a page to the point that you're optimizing so much for the keywords and for the best structure and for the best images that you kind of don't deliver the value to the customer. And I come across these pages all the time in other like SaaS application blog posts and just other blog posts in general where you can kind of tell that they were trying to over-index on something like CRM application or on, you know, like best water bottle filtration or something like that. I don't know. It's the content and the title is so optimized and key and stuff with keywords that you knew that the page was meant for someone to find on Google. But then the content itself is kind of like very generic, or it doesn't really have a point of view, or it doesn't really have a lot of useful content, to be honest. But the page in itself was structured in a way to make it better for SEO. Now, over time, I don't think these pages will do well because if you are going to the page, if a random web browser is going to the page and they don't find that the page is compelling and they just bounce, then that that will be a signal in the Google search algorithm as to the usefulness of that page. So that eventually will lower the rankings. I think overall though, when you come across one of these pages that is optimized for SEO, people can tell whether or not it's good or not and whether or not the content is useful. And so if there's really nothing insightful, then people would just bounce. But I think it's kind of funny to see that people are doing these kind of pages primarily for SEO purposes. And it's just kind of a way to build their domain's authority in Google's eyes. So interestingly, I never thought about this in terms of building my own websites, but I think that is just a nice lesson to know is if you're building these pages, as they say, as Stelly and Hidden say in the episode, yes, optimize for SEO, but at the end of the day, you want to make the best version of that page compared to your competitors. And that means putting in insightful content, useful content, and also having a clear call to action. Those things, I think, will always trump any other pages that are trying to optimize, so to speak, for SEO. So that's the first episode I came across recently that I thought you guys might find interesting. The second one is another newer podcast I started listening to called Numbers Geek with Steve Ballmer from the LA Clippers. And this is, I believe this episode or this podcast is done in conjunction with GeekWire and Steve Ballmer's USA Facts. And this, I think this podcast is a little more in line with our focus for Dear Analyst on data and data analysis. And it's all about numbers, which I love. And a lot of the episodes are about numbers in sports, which is really cool because you learn about one thing I love what they do with this podcast is they'll give Steve a stat sheet of a basketball game, and they'll anonymize the teams and anonymize the players, and based on those numbers, all he has to go with is the numbers and the positions, and he has to figure out which game that was and who the teams were. And it's a really interesting analysis into how Steve thinks about the data, the stat sheet from basketball games. And you can kind of tell as he's thinking aloud about what game those stats were from. And I almost think this could be like a really interesting interview question if you are interviewing for, let's say, a data analyst role, or if you're working for a sports team or a sports league and you're kind of into sabermetrics and you're going into a data role, that could be an interesting way to interview people to see what they think about the numbers and trying to tell a story about those numbers. Anyways, in episode, actually, I don't even know what episode this is. It just says, well, it was an episode from February 28th, so not too long ago. And the episode name is called Trade-Off, the U.S., China, and the Real Numbers of Global Trade. And in this episode, they talk about the trade deficit. And the number that you hear the most thrown around in the media is our U.S. trade deficit is $552 billion, I believe is the number. And around minute eight, they actually break down what that trade deficit entails. And a few variables that the trade deficit does not take into account is the exports and imports of human capital. So for instance, when United States citizens go abroad to work, or when people from abroad come to the United States to work, that also adds to the deficit and surplus of trade between the two countries. And so that's one number. Those numbers in terms of the output and input provided by these people is not calculated into the trade deficit. And interestingly, you know, we talk about this trade deficit being a huge number, but it's actually driven almost entirely by our trade with China. And I think anytime we can break down, I think, you know, to me, this having this episode, having Steve break down what the trade deficit is, it just kind of shows how the media can really easily pin themselves to a big number like this $552 billion number. But in reality, most of it is tied to one country, one main driver, which in this case was China. And I think taking into account the human capital and other variables, China actually accounts for 80% of the trade deficit. I think we're at like 350 something billion trade deficit with China. I think that was the number they quoted in the episode. But I think more broadly speaking, is this made me think about all the numbers we hear about in the media, whether it's GDP, trade deficit, various economic indicators, until you actually see the data and see the core drivers behind the number, I think it's easy to paint a picture about, oh, this is really bad or this is really good for our economy, for our society, for our people. But seeing the key core drivers behind this big number that we hear about in the media, it makes you think more about the politics and the policies that are being created between our countries. So for instance, they talk about how we have actually have a trade surplus with Mexico and Canada because of the NAFTA agreement, but there's so much more going on between our negotiations with China because of the fact that we're in such a big trade deficit with them. So I think in general, as an analyst, you should be always skeptical, always curious, always asking questions about the numbers. And this episode, to me, really highlighted the fact that once you dig deep into numbers, you'll find things that are really interesting and can uncover more about why certain things are moving in certain directions. All right, the final episode I'm going to talk about is not a new podcast I've been listening to, but I think I haven't reviewed any episodes from this podcast yet, but it's Product Hunt Radio. Product Hunt is a website where you can see new products being launched by just random makers and startup creators and builders around the world, and they have their own podcast, of course, called Product Hunt Radio. And in a recent episode, again, I don't know why I can't find the episode numbers. I'll try to find them and put them in the episode description. But this episode was called Venture Capital 101 with Eric Bahn from Hustle Fund, which is, I guess, a fund based in San Francisco. And around minute 8:53, they talk about one topic that's very near and dear to my heart. And it should be near and dear to yours if you are working in Excel or working with data, is they talk about some platforms that they use and platforms they've seen come up in the world. And they talk about Webflow and Retool and this whole class of tools that are called no-code or low-code tools. And I've been writing a lot about low-code and no-code on the Coda blog and on my own blog and the Keycuts website. And the bigger trend that Ryan and Eric were talking about is the fact that back in the day, if you wanted to launch a website, you could design it really quickly, like in, you know, Adobe Illustrator or in Dreamweaver. But then to actually get it coded up, you would have to get a developer or a programmer, right? But today, there's so many websites and so many platforms that allow you to create a pretty fully functional website and almost like a web application without needing to code. And that's because so much of that behind-the-scenes, back-end interactions are abstracted for the user, so that if you are working in a marketing role or a customer service role and you just want to build something really simple to handle some simple workflow, today, you might be doing that in Excel or Google Sheets, which is totally fine, but then you start hitting certain limits of what those tools can do. And that's when you might turn to, at least what they referenced in the episode, are tools like Retool, Webflow, Coda, which is I'm obviously a big fan of. And so they just start talking about this trend towards these no-code tools, and Ryan has written a lot about no-code as well. And I think that freedom and that ability to create, the ability to express yourself using these no-code tools is something that I think I wanted to hint at or talk about, because previously, if you were a marketer, if you're in product, if you are in customer service, you were kind of constrained to using whatever tools were passed down to you from IT, whether it's Salesforce or maybe even like some kind of Oracle application. And ultimately, you wanted something that was more seamless to use, and you would now can build those workflow applications using these no-code platforms. And I think Eric in the episode actually talks about the franchisement of people and bring this ability to create applications to the masses beyond programmers and developers. So yeah, that's the last episode I wanted to review, and I wanted to end on that because of the fact I think that no-code is here to stay, and the ability for people to create, to build, to make, I think is something that is undervalued, and with these new platforms gives people the ability to create really amazing tools. And I really hope that you, as a data analyst or data person, think about using tools beyond just Excel, beyond just Python, beyond just, I don't know, maybe you're using some data science like Jupyter Notebook for running your data science tasks. There are so many other tools out there to make your data more accessible for other people. And I think especially for startups, which Product Hunt is geared towards, I believe, you can quickly create a website or an application and just try to get that product market fit, as they talk about in this episode, without having to completely hire a developer or development team to build the application for you. And so it's a really nice, quick and easy way to prototype a website or an application without spending a huge amount of time and resources and just trying to get that product market fit. And once you get that, then you can go on and hire all the developers you want to build the full feature set for your application. So with that, I want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to leave them, and I will talk to you guys next time.